Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the UFlex Limited Q1 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sanjesh Jain. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Seema. Good afternoon, everyone, and on behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, I would like to thank you all for taking the time to join us on UFlex Limited Q1 Results Conference Call. From the company leadership team, we have with us Mr. Rajesh Bhatia, Group CFO, UFlex Limited, Mr. Anand Sri Chaturvedi, Vice President and CEO, Flex Film International, Mr. Apurva Sri Chaturvedi, Director, EU Operations and Sustainability, and Mr. Venu Saini, Vice President, Corporate Finance, M&A and Investor Relationship. We will have the opening remarks done by the management, post which we will have a Q&A session. I would like to hand over the proceeding to Mr. Rajesh Bhatia for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon to all on the call. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Rajesh Bhatia, and I'm going to be giving you the results for the Q1 ending 30th June 2022. So for the quarter, it has been a reasonably good quarter. Our top line grew by on a year-on-year basis by 46.5% to little over 4,000 crores, and which was backed by 15.7% volume growth on a year-to-year basis. And we had EBITDA was up by about 44.3% to 725 crores on a year-on-year basis. And on a Q&Q basis, it's up by 4.1%. And PAT is again, up by close to about 42% to 375 crores. This is the highest ever PAT by UFlex in any quarter so far. And on a Q&Q basis also, this is up by 6.9%. The notable contributions, achievements in the quarter was the first is the aseptic packaging business, where we achieved about 91% capacity utilization, considering the extended capacity of 7 billion packs. And we had almost 123% volume growth in the aseptic packaging business on a year-on-year basis. And even on a quarter-to-quarter basis, we had a 61% volume growth for the in this quarter over the March quarter. So that business has done phenomenally well, and the enhanced capacity utilization, which was commissioned in April early, came very handy for this season. And to the best of our ability, we could we could achieve a very high level of capacity utilization. And we could have done a bit better, but, you know, initial teething troubles always when you set up new things are always there. But we've been able to overcome those subsequently. And the endeavor is to bottleneck the plant, and the purpose is that, you know, can you with the same facility produce, instead of the rated capacity of 7 billion packs, can you do anywhere between 8 to 9 billion packs? I think our endeavor is to do that. So let's see the next season as to how do we perform on that front. The other notable achievement during this period is we've achieved 71% plus capacity utilization at our Nigeria facility. And we've been, while we commissioned that in Q2 of FY22, so the first two quarters, we had, you know, some logistics and other issues there, but happy to say that now we are ramping up the production and the sales from that particular business. And the idea is to again, you know, take it to the much higher capacity utilization what we are achieving in some of the other businesses. So overall, you know, the quarter has been decent. We are now looking at commissioning our CPP facility in Dubai and India, and our BOPET facility in India later, which will give us, you know, additional revenues as well as profitability. Generally, a good quarter from overall perspective. Thank you.
So should we begin with the Q&A session?
Sure, let's start.
All right, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. We take the first question from the line of Mr. Shubham Agarwal from Etiquas. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. And first of all, congratulations to the entire team. So my first question is related to the aseptic packaging division. Sir, I wanted to know, with the commissioning of new line, what would be our current market capacity? And going forward, what is the reasonable growth trajectory that we are looking for this division, given that you have mentioned that we'll expand our capacity to probably 9 billion pack over the next 1 year?
So the current rated capacity is 7 billion packs a year. Now, we are seeing expansion. We're not looking at any fresh investment per se, but we are looking to de-bottleneck the existing facility to see if we can still optimize the production from the same plant between 8 to 9 billion packs a year.
So, sir, what would be our current market share in this division with this commissioning?
I think we will have close to anywhere between 22% to 25% market share.
And what is the reasonable, sustainable growth that we can achieve in this division, sir?
This business, as I understand, the growth is about 18% to 20% for the at an industry level.
Okay.
So, there's no reason that, you know, why we should not be able to achieve that growth.
Got it. And sir, with the new capacity at 7 billion pack, what is the total turnover that we can do, and what is the sustainable margin that currently we are doing in this business?
So I think we can do a top line of anywhere between 1200 to 1400 crores at a 7 billion pack output.
Okay.
From the pack size and all that, so that's why I'm giving a range. And the margins could be about 20% and above.
20% EBITDA level.
EBITDA level.
Okay, thank you. Fair enough. Sir, my second question is related to our BOPET division. So last quarter, we have seen in India especially the BOPET margins have started declining. So I wanted to know what is the global trend because we have capacities around the world. So Q on Q from Q2 onwards, how do you see the spread moving?
Bhatia, I can answer that if it's okay. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, am I audible?
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay. So in terms of the pricing posture of the Indian market related to the BOPET product versus the global markets, so global market prices are obviously in a very different direction compared to the Indian prices, especially on a gross margin posture. And so far right now, the summer season has been of a normal nature of demand, but we're expecting a demand recovery in the European market and a demand recovery in the Middle Eastern and North African and African markets for the last quarter of the year for the balance remaining months. So I think from a gross margin side, what you've been tracking, correlating in terms of the India gross margin, that is not going to have an extremely strong spillover onto the global markets.
Okay. So, sir, but globally also, we are expecting a lot of lines to come up. So do you feel that the demand would be adequate to meet the additional supply?
If you look from the supply side, the net capacity additions for the BOPET extruded factory portfolio is coming in India and China. The rest of the world, the net capacity addition is very, very limited and almost negligible if you look at the size of the markets. So I think companies in positions like ours, where we have a complete understanding and good presence in the Indian market, along with being global market leaders, I don't think that, I think we'll be able to manage the trade winds that develop out of the net capacity addition. And globally, the picture that's come out of the pandemic of companies needing reliable suppliers close at hand, that story is continuing to carry weight in the market's mind. And customers, we feel if we do a good job with our assets, customers will be sensitive to the value addition of that approach.
Okay. Fair enough, sir. Sir, I'll come back in the queue. Thank you for answering my question.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We take the next question from the line of Chirag Singhal from First Water Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So just to continue to the previous participant's question on the Asepto business. So if you look at the next 2 to 3 years, or let's say even further, 4 to 5 years down the line, what kind of target we have in our mind from the current 7 billion packs? Just to get a broad picture on where we are headed in the Asepto business.
So I already answered that. If you say from a turnover point of view, I think the current capacity can lead us to 1,200-1,400 crore annualized revenue, and the EBITDA margin guidance also I gave. Is there anything else you want to ask, or is it same thing?
No, no. So that I understood. So we are anyways running at 91% capacity utilization for the entire 7 billion packs. And I also understood that, with debottlenecking, we'll have 1 to 2 billion packs by next year or so. But beyond that, by adding new lines, so do you have any sort of a target that we can work with, that this is the target for the next 3 to 5 years in the Asepto business? From let's say 8 to 9 billion packs that we can achieve from the existing setup.
I think we'll be in a position to give you a more clear picture on the capacity additions for the aseptic by the end of the next quarter. I think right now, considering what Mr. Bhatia has shared, that with the debottlenecking, you're getting about 20% more on the product capacity that you have today. And I think even if you assume the growth levels in the market of at least 15-20%, I think there's enough room to balance our existing onshore India capacity with that growth trajectory, and then make a better decision down the line.
Sure. Okay, sir. My next question is on the, you know, was there any one-off expenses in the P&L because of currency depreciation in Russia for Q1?
Because of the currency appreciation in Russia, we had our loan book swelled by about 163 crores.
Okay, so there was no... Yeah.
No, the profitability impact is also there in Russia this quarter because, you know, the currency fluctuated. It went from 75 to 125. 125, it came down to 55. So there were impacts on the P&L in the normal course of the business as in the way we conduct our business, way we collect our receivables, benchmark to certain exchange rates and our payables benchmark to certain exchange rates. Yes, we had some, you know, underperformance there because of this, you know, fluctuation in that business.
Okay, so could you please quantify the impact on the P&L during the quarter? As in, what was the one-off component during the quarter in the P&L?
Be able to share that.
Okay, all right. Okay, so just on the you know recycling part. So we have been talking about a lot of expansions that we have been doing in various different streams in the overall recycling. Just wanted to understand you know from a broad picture that what kind of total capex that you've already spent in the recycling, what is the current capacity, the payback period. And also just wanted to understand, you know, when we look at, let's say, a business like aluminium, wherein the recycled aluminium is generally purchased at a discount to the LME aluminium and hence giving a benefit to the, you know, aluminium producers. Is there some similar advantage that we also get when we use rPET instead of virgin PET? And, you know, the cost of production goes down and eventually a sustainable profit per kg, you know, can be achieved over a period of time.
Can I request Mr. Anandchiri Chakurvedi to address that?
Sure, but Mr. Bhatia, I think you can give the CapEx numbers and the payback numbers. I'd be happy to address, you know, the pricing and the payback cycle.
I think, Anandchiri, if you can just give the business perspective, I'll add those inputs in the end.
Sure, sure, absolutely. So, you know, from a perspective of an input-output ratio, you know, it's when we add in, you know, any kind of recycled from resin from our facilities, it's not exactly the same as what you are describing that the aluminium manufacturers do, you know, because for us, you know, cost of sourcing, cost of cleaning can vary from geography to geography. However, today, the advantage that we all have as an industry is that rPET material is sold at a premium as compared to virgin material. So it's really today, if we look at the market today, it's that premium that rPET is sold at that makes up for, you know, basically these additional ancillary transition costs to rPET. But once you hit a certain quantity, and that sort of quantity is really being defined by the industry because that industry standard has not really been defined as of now. Then you will start seeing some of these benefits that you are seeing that the aluminium makers, you know, sort of get at scale. But until that point, it's really the premium that you get in the rPET market, which also varies by geography, but it is, you know, but it is a consistent premium in any geography that you are selling in that then allows a better payback period for this material.
Right. Okay. So when you talk about premium, so could you also help me with the, you know, sales volume that we do for 90 or 100% rPET films as a percentage to the total sales volume? Just to understand that what kind of scale we have achieved and what prospects do we have over the next 5 to 6 years?
we can get you back those numbers, you know. I wouldn't have those numbers off the top of my head for every geography.
Sure, sir. No problem. Thanks.
Yeah.
One more question.
Just to give you a supplementary insight that you can carry back into your industry is that right now the adoption of the RPET film product is heterogeneous globally. So certain markets are leading in terms of customer demand, whether it's shaped by the customers or directly by their end customer. And in other markets, either because of a lack of regulation or because of a lack of marketing on behalf of the end customers, the demand for 100% RPET polyester film has still not crystallized to a point where we should, you know, start, let's say, exposing more of our film capacities to that product. So I think it will happen over time. And that is one of the reasons why, you know, the sort of formalization of the aluminium model is not applying one-to-one onto the question that you are asking.
Right. Okay. Understood, sir. And Mr. Bhatia, could you help me with the numbers on the capex and the payback period?
So a typical plant, depending on the location and the cost of civil work at that location, will cost between $10 to $12 million of an investment here in the PCR, and the payback should ideally be between about 4 to 5 years.
Okay, all right. So last question, and then maybe I can join back in the queue. This is on the specialty sales volumes. So if you look at the peer set, most of the companies are giving a breakup of how they are, what is the total component of the specialty sales volume as a percentage to the total sales volume at the moment, and what are their ambitions over the next 2 to 3 years. Now, the reason why they are giving and putting it in front of the investors is what they are trying to imply is there is a sustainable EBITDA per kg or let's say sustainable profit margins in a specialty sales vis-a-vis the commodity sales volumes. So just wanted to understand where do we stand currently in terms of our specialty sales volume as a percentage to the total sales volume. And is it fair to assume that there is a sustainable profit per kg? Because, you know, we are in a cyclical industry and the spreads clearly are totally volatile in terms of the demand and supply. So if we are able to, you know, ramp up our specialty sales volume portfolio, maybe we can have some sort of a sustainable profit per kg going forward. So this is the assumption that I'm working with, but just wanted to know your perspective. Where do we stand in terms of the specialty sales volume at the moment, and whether it is fair to assume that the profits are sustainable in specialty sales?
So can I ask you a question? When you talk about sustainability films, you know, from your definition and your benchmark, how are you qualifying those films as sustainable, as specialty films? Are those specialty films based on, whatever the company you're talking to is telling you is specialty, or is that you have a benchmark that defines those films?
No, sir. So I don't have a benchmark personally, but whatever I've heard, I can put it in front of you. So basically, what the companies are stating is that specialties are no longer considered to be just metallized and coated films. It depends on the applications the films are used into, and which are much more specialized than a simple metallized or a coated film. So what we have, known from the presentations is the capacity that we have for the metallized and coating films. But obviously with whatever we have heard from different companies is that, specialty is much more than that. It's not just restricted to the metallized and coated films. So, personally, I don't have any benchmark, but this is what fair understanding I have.
I'm sorry to spin this on you, but that's exactly the problem, right? The problem is, our internal benchmark for what we define specialty is very, very different from what the industry defines as specialty. And that's the reason why we don't, sort of reveal these numbers, because a lot of times, you know, what's being called a specialty is not necessarily specialty. So I'll tell you, our internal benchmark for specialty is based purely on volume and margin. Those are the two things that we look at when we, you know, see internal specialty films, you know. Mr. Bhatia can give you more details at a later time, but that's the reason why it's kind of futile to discuss specialty films, because there's no benchmark, right? What you are calling and what the industry might be calling a specialty film might not be a specialty film as defined by the industry, you know, as actual reality. But it's being touted as specialty film because it sounds nice on a presentation, or it sounds nice on a, you know, on a sort of news headline. And that's where sort of difference comes in. So, you know, UFlex's definition of specialty is a far higher standard than I would say the general industry definition. And that's why a lot of it is linked to our IP. And that's why we don't go into the same details, because we're not looking, you know, we're looking for these products to find a home, not necessarily for, you know, these products to boost other things.
Sure, sir. So when you say that you have some internal threshold, could you put some numbers to it, that, you know, a constant 15 to 20 rupees higher than the commodity spread, or 30 to 40 rupees? As in, what is the internal threshold that you have to distinguish specialty, sales from commodity sales?
We can elaborate on that later, but it's an internal threshold, you know. So I think I'll let Mr. Bhatia elaborate on that later.
Okay. All right.
To give you a rough guidance, as a benchmark, there should be at least a 15% expansion in gross margin on specialty sales. So obviously, there are different companies produce these products differently. You will respect the fact that many companies have different kinds of lines, different kinds of downstream equipment, all of which are important, because to produce a specialty film, you still need access to the base quality product, because you still need the base chemistry and the base rheology of a polymer product on which you can add value and sell it to the end customer. So at a minimum, you can say there should be at least a 15% expansion in gross margin on account of specialty sales. That will be at least a minimum threshold for us, for it to be economically attractive to us.
Okay. Right, sir. That was quite elaborative, and thanks a lot for all the answers, and I hope that, the promoters participate in the con calls going ahead as well. I'll join back in the queue in case of any further questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Zain from Odyssey Capital Management. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Congratulations on a good set of numbers, sir. Most of my questions, almost all of them, have been answered. So I just want to ask, could you give them, if the raw material prices, are they going down?
Sorry, what? You were not audible. Can you please repeat your question?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, is better now.
Yeah, I'm saying, are the raw material prices going down?
Yes. Post 15th July to 15th August, we have some softening of the raw material price.
Okay. So, and my second question is, there was some issue with the JK government that you discussed in the last con call. So could you throw some light on that? Has that been solved? Some PLI problems?
No. So that matter, now we will have to litigate there to get our due rights, and not accounts in our those benefits are not being accounted for now.
It's going to take a long time. Okay, thank you so much, sir, and all the best for the next quarter and the coming years.
Thank you,
sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Yash from Dant Equity. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, my first question is regarding Nigeria. You said it crossed 70% capacity utilization, but has it become EBITDA positive in this quarter?
Sorry?
Has the Nigeria plant turned EBITDA positive this quarter?
Is a bit of positive this quarter.
Okay. Your Dharwad capacity on your Dharwad expansion. Hello.
Dharwad.
What kind of top line would would that expansion add on full capacity utilization?
So Dharwad expansion could give you about, if you produce 4,000 tons, it will give you about 50 crores per month.
50 crores per month. Full capacity utilization?
No, not full. Full would be about 4,500
tons. Could you help me with the top line figure? That's in case.
Sorry? I said no, 50 crores per month.
That is PAT, right?
That is the top line. Top line, no?
Sorry.
Okay. Also, raw material pricing, could you elaborate more on that, on how much the prices have come down by? Would you be able to quantify it?
I think it's too premature. I think this trend has only been for a few days. So, let's not hazard a guess on that. When we'll have, the next quarter, I think give you that, you know, as to what happened to the prices. The fall in the raw material price have been really marginal only. So I think anything to elaborate beyond that may not be possible for us today because, you know, the time period involved has been pretty, very, very short.
Sir, crude oil has fallen from 115 to, I think, $90 approximately. So, the raw material pricing isn't cooling at the same speed that at which it went up, right? So, is that showing a very good demand base?
So, we've already seen that, you know, vis-a-vis last quarter versus this quarter, how the crude has also behaved. So it's in line with them. There is nothing exceptional to, to those fall and all.
Your operating OPM expansion, is there any visibility in the coming quarter?
For Dharwad?
Your OPM. No. Overall operating margin. Or are you comfortable with 18%?
I think 18%, as I've been saying earlier, a range of 17% to 19% is quite a comfort zone for us. But again, if the raw material prices fall and the margins are sustained, so your EBITDA margins would always look much higher, in respect.
Also, would you be able to elaborate on the demand in Europe and US?
Sorry?
Would you be able to elaborate about the demand right now in Europe and US?
So the demand right now in Europe is struggling with the its own energy issues and all that. So the demand is a bit soft. But, you know, typically that's been the phenomenon in this period generally over the years we've seen. So I think nothing much to get bothered about that, you know, on an annual basis, will you be able to outperform the last year or so? I think we'll be here.
On your operating profit margin front, you said that you're comfortable with 18%, right? Would you be able to give a guidance for the coming quarters, if any? Or will you be able to maintain the same margin?
We're not giving any guidance for the next quarters as of now. For the year as a whole, I think we've earlier also said about 17% to 19% is our range.
Okay, also what's the update on the Dubai listing?
On the?
Dubai listing, the subsidiary that is getting listed in the Dubai exchange?
I think the markets right now are not conducive, and as and when they are back, we'll be back in business on that front.
Also, on the my last question on the debt front, when by which quarter are we expecting the debt to start coming out?
So the debt, as we said that, you know, the debt hasn't gone up in this quarter also. It's the same what was there in the last quarter, despite the fact that, you know, we have now, you know, CPP and the BOPET facilities under commissioning for which the new debt is being drawn. So the current amortization structure versus the new debt added for those projects is almost, you know, keeping the debt at a static level. So I think the debt will peak by March 31st, 2023. And thereafter, you know, it will start coming down.
Could you talk about the new capacity that you've announced? You've announced the new plant, right?
We've announced a backward integration facility at Panipat, where we're going to manufacture the resin for the PET films. So that is the project which we are undertaking. And that project will come up in FY 2026. So we will, whatever is the debt added on for that, the current amortization over the next 2 years will neutralize that new debt which is taken for that project.
Could you make me understand about how that project is going to help Uplex? Is it going to help Uplex expand the OPM?
So, two things important in that is, one is that will help us protect margins. And we've seen in the last couple of years that, you know, both the availability as well as the pricing on our even raw material side was getting a bit erratic. Just because we have an overall global presence, so we've been able to meet our raw material requirements from wherever we can for India as well as our overseas facilities. But yes, availability issues, supply chain issues have been the order of the day, at least for the last year or so. And that's why, you know, we've taken the decision to backward integration so that, you know, even today for some of our facilities in global markets, we source from India, we source from Southeast Asia, and we source from Middle East. And that's where, you know, we've been supplying raw material to our offshore businesses. This will help us, you know, both quality-wise, the consistent quality. You're not moving from one quality, one supplier to another, and that resultant fluctuation in quality. All those things are going to be plus on this. Plus the margins are definitely there is today, both in India as well as in the international markets, the markups on the indices have shot up quite a bit in this space.
In the last con call, if you remember, I had asked you if you had any plans of listing aseptic packaging as a separate entity, and you said it's a good idea and the management will, you know, think about it. Has there been any thinking in that front?
No, we've not given any thought process as of now.
Also, in the existing aseptic packaging plant, how much would you be able to expand more in a brownfield expansion?
So, at this plant, we can duplicate the capacity, given the resources in terms of land and others what we have presently at this plant. But currently, the endeavor is not to set up anything new. We are only trying to debottleneck and see whether at the same plant can we take the more output out.
Yeah. So at the same plant, if you choose to double your capacity, you can.
We can.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Thank you, sir. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Shivam Saxena. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for taking my question. Congratulations for a good set of numbers. Only one question is that what would be the impact of plastic ban from this quarter onwards, Q2? What it will be reflected in this quarter? How much will be the impact?
There's no impact on Uflex for any of the plastic ban, because none of the items in the plastic ban affect Uflex. As part of the aseptic packaging for certain segments, we've been using the plastic straws, so they'll be replaced with the paper straws as we've already ordered those machines.
So would it be a positive impact on the company if there is a plastic ban? Can we say that?
I think there's no impact. I think let's remain on that as well. How the substitutes for the for the items which have been banned, and how do they impact what are the alternatives which emerge from there, and how does it help the flexible packaging films companies and all that. I think let's wait and watch and see that impact of that.
What about the have you taken any price hikes recently? After the June quarter, any price hikes were taken, and will they continue in this quarter also?
No, so the price hikes earlier have also been taken based on the raw material price increases. And, even in this quarter, if you see, the top line grew by close to about 47%, while the volume growth is close to about 16%. So there's a substantive, on a year-on-year basis, there's a substantive increase in the price. If you see the last quarter, we had a 65% top-line growth, backed by 38% volume growth. So this quarter, again, the impact of the price rise has been there. But as we said that, last 1 month or so, 3 weeks to be precise, the raw materials, as the crude has come down, the raw materials have come down. So to the extent the raw materials come down, depending on the demand supply situation, you can either pass on the prices or you can keep some of the margins to yourself. Depending on that, I think that's the call business takes on a regular basis. Last couple of years, we've seen that, whatever is the price increase, that is being constantly passed on to the customer. Only in the flexible packaging business, there may be certain lag in passing on that prices. But generally, in the larger business area for us, we passing on the prices.
So basically, if you are saying the commodity prices go down, then you reduce the pricing, or you can reduce the customers come to reduce the prices also. The top line can reduce by that amount, right?
Yeah.
I understand. Got it. Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. We take the next question from the line of Mr. Rishabh Shah from Anubhuti Advisors. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity. So, first question, when do we expect the new facilities at commission?
We're targeting Q3 later or Q4 beginning.
Okay. And on the aseptic debottlenecking, will that also be concluded in this financial year itself?
No, I think this year the season is now off. So January next only now the season will start. So hopefully by that time we should have sorted the things out.
Understood. I think just wanted to confirm, have our debt levels on a net basis have remained flat, because our finance cost has actually gone up 7% sequentially. So wanted to understand that part.
So the debt level on a constant currency basis has remained the same. Overall, if you see, the net debt has gone up by 150 crores. And if everything else I were to keep aside, I were to see only Russia. So because of the currency appreciation there, in rupee terms, their debt has gone up by 163 crores.
Okay. And I think while you were answering a previous participant, you said that we have taken a new debt for commissioning of this new plant. So has that debt been taken at a higher rate, or is it still in line with the previous our debt levels?
It's only then when you will take the rupee loan, it will always be, you know, sort of costlier than the foreign currency loans in our global businesses. So what right now we are adding to the debt level, because the offshore projects were already commissioned last year itself, but yes, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, if you see, because last year we didn't have the Nigeria project, which was commissioned in Q2 and towards Q2.
Yeah.
And so this year in Q1 versus last year of Q1, we have the debt of the Nigeria project, which has come at its appearance. So that's where you see, despite the debt almost remaining the same, you see a higher interest outlay.
Okay, understood. That was all from my side. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. We take the next follow-up question from the line of Mr. Shubham Agarwal from Equitas. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity again. And so my question, given the promoters are there on this call, I would like to...
Hello.
I guess we lost the line for Mr. Shubham. I'm promoting the next question from the line of Mr. Yash. Please go ahead, sir. Mr. Yash, your line is in talk mode, sir. You may go ahead with your question.
My question is regarding the dividend payout ratio. Has there been any thought put to that to increase it? Because from the last 5 to 10 years, your dividend output ratio has only declined every year.
You're not audible at all.
Hello? Am I audible?
You're not audible at all. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Yash.
Yeah, am I audible now, sir?
A little Hello? Better, it looks like, but only when you complete your question.
Okay, I'll try my hand.
Hello. Now?
Yes. Yeah, much better.
Yeah, my question is regarding the dividend payout ratio. The dividend payout ratio from the last 5-10 years has only come down. Has there been any thought put to that? When are we looking to increase the dividend payout ratio, since you said by the end of this year we'll hit our peak debt level? So is there any plans to increase the dividend payout ratio by then?
See, I think the dividend absolute payouts are being increased. That's what I can say. But yes, in terms of the payout ratio, you're right that, may have gone down. And the only reason for that is, as we spent a lot of capital in terms of our growth, and that's where you see, basically, if you see in the last, we had an EBITDA of close to about 700 crores. In the last quarter, we had a 725 crores now. So today we are looking at an annual EBITDA of anywhere between 2800 odd crores, up from about 900 crores what we had about 4 years ago. So all this additional EBITDA generation has come against the backdrop of fresh investments being made
into the businesses, whether it was aseptic or it was the the new facilities or brownfield or greenfield being set up in the offshore locations, and now the backward integration into. So there's been a lot of capex, and as part of the capex, when you go to your lenders for the fresh borrowings, I think there are kind of guidance from them also as to how much you need to plow back from through equity into your businesses. So all that has been done keeping in mind that there are enough resources, equity resources from the business to fund those projects. And that's been the primarily deciding sector.
Yes, sir. My question was based more about the future.
I completely understand
why you spent money and why you haven't paid out a lot of dividend in the last 10 years. But as an investor, when I look at other stocks in the same, in the same industry doing business, after if you're expecting the peak level of debt to come down in by the end of this financial year, then wouldn't you look at rewarding the shareholders too?
No, I think the intention is to create the shareholders' value, and that has been done over the years. It may not necessarily have been through dividends, but it's also reflected in the stock prices, which are again backed by the performance of the company. So overall basis, the value creation in the last 3 years has been good. Yes, I agree with you that that your expectations on dividend payouts may have been not met to the extent some of the other players are doing. But yes, our endeavor is to keep the growth momentum on. And because understand that some of the competitors you are talking about, they are while we have three or four separate businesses or maybe more, as some of the intermediaries like chemicals, cylinders, engineering, they themselves are separate businesses, and then on top of that, the three mainstream businesses, the aseptic packaging, the flexible films, and the flexible packaging. So they have their capital requirements from time to time. Very difficult for me to say that, how will the future pan out in terms of the further growth plans today. Whatever we have, we keep on announcing to the market. But yes, on the whole, we are a progressive company, and wherever we see, we can generate much better returns rather than, dividending, giving it in the form of dividend. If there are opportunities, reasonable opportunities for growth, I think we've been pursuing that. And once we stop pursuing that, then yes, of course, you don't keep the ideal cash with yourself. So there'll be distributions for sure.
Yes, sir. I completely get that. And the only reason I asked this question was because definitely in the near future, we are looking at a point where the debt levels hit their peak. And once the peak is over, I was just wondering what the company plans on doing with the cash that's coming in. If you have further growth plans, that's well and good. But if you don't have further growth plans, you will also be looking at reducing your debt and deleveraging your balance sheet, right?
I think the balance sheet is not leveraged. If I see my net debt to EBITDA basis, if I annualize my net debt, net debt and the earning numbers, we are talking about less than 1.5x of a net debt to EBITDA. So I think we are in a comfortable zone over there. But taking your point that I think once we come back to that situation where there are no further opportunities to grow, I think the management will consider probably a higher dividend payout ratio at that point in time. But, very difficult to commit anything on this call at this point in time.
Okay, sir. And also, I just have one more thing on the investor front. Would you, what are the steps the management is taking to make more Uflex a more investor attractive opportunity? I'm not talking in terms of growth. In terms of growth, I think you guys are firing on all cylinders. But you recently hired a new PR agency too, right? If I'm not mistaken. So in that front, can I understand what steps the PR agency is taking or what step the company is taking in that front to expand investor awareness?
I think that's an agenda which is currently under discussion with that, and as part of that agenda only, this is the first time you see the promoter core group on the call this time. I think we will, we are in constant discussion with our consultant, and next couple of quarters we'll give you more guidance on, or you will see for yourself as to what we've done to, improve our investors' relationships.
Yes, sir. And also, from next quarter onwards, would be very helpful if you could give some sort of guidance in terms of at least the coming quarter. That would be really helpful as an investor for me to understand where the business is heading. So thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a nice day. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We take the next follow-up question from the line of Mr. Shubham Agarwal from Equitas. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity. Am I audible? Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please.
Yeah, you are audible.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So, given that the promoters are there on the call, I would like to take this opportunity to understand from them what is the vision that they have in place for the company over the next 3 to 5 years. What are the areas that they are focusing on? Any new specific areas that they would like to talk about? Given that Mr. Bhatia said there are multiple growth levers that we would be investing in. So broadly, just if you could help us understand what you are thinking, that would be very helpful, sir. Thank you.
Apushi, do you want to start with this?
Yeah, sure. So obviously, we're going to grow more in the film business. The film business will continue to grow, and along with that, as Mr. Bhatia has explained earlier in the call, there will be certain capital exposed also to improving the availability and security of raw material, because obviously it will be geographically diverse. So we'll continue to commit to that strategy of geographical diversification on the expansion of the net film capacity. Certain amount of capital will also go for the polyester raw material. And along with that, the aseptic business is something that, as we have said earlier said in the call, that after debottlenecking, we can take up a longer term perspective on the aseptic business to also make it grow. Along with that, then obviously as the team capacity goes up, there'll be room to further penetrate the available value additions available in the film sector. So that is also, that's also review under the management. Along with that, obviously, because since we're diverse, we are seeing what's happening in energy, and we're seeing what's happening in this, what's marketed as a transition to different energy base. And if there's any room to grow in those sectors, we can look at that as well. But as of now, the priority will be more growth in the film business, a certain amount of capital exposed for the defensibility of the raw material chains, and along with growth in the aseptic business as well.
Got it. Sir, and secondly, we understand over the last few years, we have gone through a significant CapEx cycle, and we have delivered when it comes to number. But on the same time, it's not reflective on the share price. Sir, so I think it's a very good opportunity for the promoter itself to buy shares from market. Obviously, you bought some share last quarter, but what are your thoughts on that?
That is a very small percentage that was bought by the promoter. That was only 0.4%.
Right.
The capital requirements are today elsewhere, so there's not there's no such plan to, look at any large scale, buyback kind of structure. I think, but, to still give
more value to the shareholders, the wealth creation for the shareholders. We thought of other routes as to how we can do it, and listing the Dubai entity was one such route, which we are pursuing just because, you know, the markets will come back once the interest rate cycle is sort of stabilized, the equity markets. So that would be one huge fillip to the way the company is valued, because whatever discussions we having, the roadmap that our investment bankers are showing us for that listing, I think this will put the company Uflex parent valuation also in a completely different perspective.
Sir, how much are we looking to dilute in the Dubai business?
I won't divulge any details of that.
No problem. I understand, sir. Thank you. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. Thank you, everybody. On behalf of ICICI Security, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.